Blog Talk Radio.
There's a direct relationship between having the businesses and being in prison. Go find see how many Asians you can find in American prisons. You ain't going to be in there. But 51% of your prison will be black because blacks don't have any businesses and industries. There's a direct link. Blacks won't practice group economics. Blacks won't practice group politics. If you don't practice, you're setting yourself up. I told you that five-story building, you're setting yourself to get wiped out. Understand the nature of race, which is economic. If you build the first floor, it's economic. Build your businesses and your industries. Control business and industry, and put that pulls in your money. And hold that money. And practice group economics with it. Arab and Asian money bounces 12 or 13 times for at least. Jewish money bounces 18 times. Black folk got to learn how to practice group economics. Black Americans spend every penny they get outside their own community. Then you take the money and the wealth that you get from that first floor and go to the second floor. The second floor is politics. You then take that money on the first floor and you control your politics. Black folk must quit allowing people to tell them to go out and vote. Vote for what? Nobody's going to do anything for black folk in politics. Politics is controlled by money. Major corporations who got the money. That's what controls politics. If you have no money, you have no say-so, you have no benefits coming. So you take your money and you control and you take your money on the first floor, you buy every politician on the second floor. And any politician you can't buy, you rent or lease them to get what you need. Then once you get the second floor under control with the politician, with your money, then you go to the third floor. The third floor then is the police department and the court system. You take your money from the first floor and your politics on the second floor and you control the court system and the police department. Then the fourth floor then is media. You then take the money that you generate off the first floor from business and industries and you go after radio stations, TV stations, newspapers, and cable systems so that you can now inform and communicate with your own people. Right now, black folk only control less than 35 thousandths of 1% of the media in the United States. Out of 12,000 radio stations, black folk own about something like about 75 or 80. That's all. You own no cable systems. You don't have a daily newspaper. You have nothing of importance. You got about one black TV station. And so you can't communicate with your people. You can't inform your people. You can't do anything. You can have Rush Limbaugh and all the rest of the guys talking about racism all day long and bad-mouthing you. And O'Reilly, they can call black folk all kind of names all day long. What are you going to do? You can't respond. You can't even communicate with your own people because you don't have an economic base. 51% of all the prisons in the United States are black people. You know, you only make up 12% of the population. That's no accident. It's because you don't control the economics and the politics. And they're going to go after the weakest people they can get their hands on to incarcerate. That's the black folk. And what are you going to do in response to them when they over-incarcerate you? You're going to go out and have a march, a demonstration. We're going to march. March, boy, who cares? Marching, they never changed anything.
Thank you. many a young athlete entertains hoop dreams. Few, if any, have tried as hard to make them come true as the kid our Steve Hartman has gone to see.
Every week, he set himself up for disappointment. Every week, 13-year-old Jamarian Stiles came to this community center in Boca Raton, Florida, hoping to play basketball with the other kids. And every week, he was rejected.
They'll start picking teams, and I would be the only one left out. And then they'll just tell me, just go home and stuff. You can break someone's heart like that.
The problem was obvious to everyone but Jamarian. He lost his hands and most of his arms as an infant due to a rare bacterial infection. But he insisted that was no reason to give up his hoop dreams.
What about soccer? Have you heard of that sport?
Yeah, hear it every day.
Why don't you play soccer? That just seems like the obvious thing.
You would think that I would be good at soccer. I'm really not. I'm horrible.
Which is why, on the first day of class here at Eagles Landing Middle School, Jamarian took his case to basketball coach Darian Williams.
Yeah.
Said he wanted to be on the team this year.
I said, all great, well, just make sure you try out.
He said, okay, great, but what are you really thinking?
This man has no arms.
Yeah.
How is he going to play basketball? But, man, he told me, Mr. Williams, I've never been on a team before. Even if I don't play, I just want to be on the team. And how could I say no to that?
And that's how the Eagles got their first armless basketball player. Jamarian, number two there, quickly earned a reputation as the hardest worker on the squad.
He was usually the first one in the gym, usually the last one to leave.
Still, he sat on the bench most of the season.
Try one more.
Until last month. Coach put him in the game with about 6 minutes left. And when he eventually got the ball on the far side of the court, everyone yelled, shoot it! So he did. And sank. A three-pointer. And if you didn't quite see that, don't worry. Because shortly after, he got the ball again. This time on the near side. For another three-pointer. At the buzzer. Jamarian Stiles. The kid no one would pick. Was now everyone's hero. Needless to say, today, Jamarian can play all he wants at the community center. He just made the volleyball team and has every intention of playing football next year. Really, the only thing he won't play is the victim.
If I could wave a magic wand right now and give you your arms back, would you want them?
I don't need them.
You don't need them?
No.
Who needs hands when you've got this kind of touch?
Now, learn this from Joel Osteen. That's my man. He be texting me. That's my man. This God done put some people around me, show me some stuff. He was telling this story. He said this man that went to heaven, and he was walking with Peter down this aisleway, and it was going down this corridor, had a lot of doors on it, and said all these doors had names on it. And he said, Peter, let me ask you something. What's all these doors, these names on? He said, don't worry about it. Just go ahead. So he kept walking. He messed around. He saw one of them doors and had his name on it. He said, whoa. He said, hey, Peter, this here ain't got my name on it. Something I need to know? He said, man, don't worry about that. You here now. Just go on in there and talk to him. See what he's here. He said, nah, I won't know what's in the door. He said, you sure you won't see what's in the door? He said, yeah. So he opened up the door. It was a warehouse. It had nothing but shelves on it. And then the shelves had nothing but packages. And all the packages had his name on them. And he said, what is all these boxes? He said, that's all of the blessings, all of the things God wanted to ship to you. But number one, you didn't ask him for it. Then number two, you didn't believe you would have it. Then you doubted him. And then you felt like you wasn't worthy. And so now all these boxes is up here. Now the man standing there wishing he had never even been in the room. And I started thinking. I got some dudes that work for me. And I said, I want you to do this graph for me. And that's what I'm finna show you now. See, what you happen is when God sends your package, he only sends it to one street. That's Faith Street. You got to stay in faith. You can't move off of Faith Street. You can't get on Doubted Drive. You can't be over there and start doubting it because your package going to go right on by. You can't lose your faith and get on not meant to be way, because your package is going to keep going right on by. Because the package just go to Faith Street. You can get your little feelings hurt, I ain't worthy. Guess what? Your package going to keep going right on by. You have not because you ask not. Then you sit up here and start feeling sorry for yourself. You go on pity way, your package keep going right on by. If you stay right on Faith Street, don't ever come off, because the blessing is coming. If you wait on it, here it comes. It may not come when you want it, but it on time. But if you get up and you move off of Faith Street, your box gonna get sent back to sender. And now you're gonna have a warehouse with a bunch of boxes with your name on it that you didn't never get. And I don't know about you, but I want everything he got for me. If he got something for me, I need all of mine. Because I don't know about you, but God lay you out, man. God will give you stuff. Man, he done took me places. I ain't never thought I was going to go. I done seen parts of the world I never even thought I could go to. He done gave me stuff. He done put people in my life. God will do it for you, man. But you just got to stay, man. Use these principles of success. Understand, God is just that way. He'll lay you out. Because if he can lay me out, see, if he fix me and change me and get me over here trying to do better, I ain't perfect. I'm just trying to do better. I still say some stuff I ain't supposed to say. You understand? I ain't got it all together yet. I just got in the gate. I'm a new kind of Christian. But ain't no lock on my gate either. So if you see, once you check me, I'm probably going to check you back. But I'm getting better at that. I don't know how to love my enemies yet. I'm getting better at it, though. But it's a process. And the more times we can make people understand that it's a process, the more people can come in. And y'all people that have been good to me, that have been praying for me. I mean, man, my mama, if she could see me now, I just wish my mama could see me. Because she been praying for this hill all her life. Watch my son. Well, he done watched me, mama. And I'm cool now. And my philosophy is very simple. I was who I was, but I am who I am. And I'm cool with both them people. Because who I was wasn't that bad, Cap. I made some mistakes, but I've been changed a little bit. And it's still a process. And the more people that you invite into the process, the better this is. Because ain't nobody perfect no how. So I really appreciate y'all, man, hearing me and listening to me. I'm going to ask Kirk Franklin if he will come.
Because I used to observe that a lot of those shacks used to be by the track where black people were.
With the room in the back.
Yes, with the room in the back. That was a safety net.
Yeah.
Where black people who would move here and there and go from here and there looking for jobs. That's usually why we move. And the jobs would play out like they always did.
And do. And,
but we had a place to go when the sun went down. But now, those shacks by the track don't exist anymore. They came and built highways right alongside of those railroad tracks where those shacks used to be. Super highways. So now, if you get on a highway, you might notice that if you, sometimes you are right alongside of a railroad track. You see trains passing
that
as you are driving.
That is true.
Down a super highway.
Mm-hmm.
Well, see, those highways used not to be there in the northwestern hemisphere. It used to be shacks along there. A lot of those shacks were on what we call railroad property. But the railroad people, the people that ran the railroads, didn't care much because nobody wanted to be down. That wasn't prime real estate.
No.
Nobody wanted to be by the tracks anyway. So black people used to build those shacks around there back when black people knew how to build shacks. Black people don't know how to build anything now because they used to build places for white people, but they cut them off with things called unions, took them out. Took the carpentry all out of the schools and all like that. So how many black people do you know how to fix anything now? It used to be thousands and millions of black people to know how to build a house from scratch out of old pieces of lumber.
Wow.
A lot of people don't remember that. Most people are not that old to have seen it done. I, coming along, I'm old enough to remember when many black people used to get together on a Saturday afternoon. That was the only time they had off, or sometimes, or on a Sunday sometimes after church. They would get together, six or eight of them, and go down and build what they call a shotgun house. It wasn't much, but it was a roof over your head, a good solid roof. I've been in some of those houses, raised up in some, all right? They were excellent, solid houses. They could stand a lot of storm and rain. They weren't much, just maybe three rooms. But I've been in some of them, and there were many, 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 many of them. But along came the white supremacists and say, these Negroes know how to build stuff. We're going to fix that so the next generation won't know how to do anything except stand in front of a place that is built and beg, because they won't know anything about carpentry or masonry or how to make anything with their hands.
Before I get started with this video, I just want to personally thank the brother Fred Hassan Powell of the Morale Facebook page for sharing this social political cartoon which is currently displayed in this video. I always big up brothers who are artists like him, my man Will James, Alex K. Art, Chris Miller, and others, because their pictures speak volumes. They don't have to say one word, because as they say, a picture is worth a thousand words. In fact, I want y'all to take a good look at this picture, which shows a brother with his hat flipped to the back telling the bald-headed brother that he's hungry as fuck. When the brother attempts to hand him his own fishing rod so he can get some fish on his own, he gets verbally assaulted. No, nigga, I want some fish. Fuck out of here with that coon shit. Man, if you look closer, you'll see that the brother that says he's hungry got a fresh pair of Jordans on his feet. And once again, I want to thank you, Fred, for sharing that photo, because it is a perfect warm-up for what I'm getting ready to bring up next. Look, last week, I had to stop past a gas station, and when I went in, I took a quick glance over to the newsstand, and I saw the Washington Post. The first thing that caught my eye was something that you normally don't see on the cover of a newspaper, which was a few straggling pants sagging brothers sitting on a stoop of a building outside. I didn't have the time to read the paper in the gas station because I had to fly, but I checked the article online when I got home, and I was just flabbergasted. I want you all to check it out for yourself in the description box. It is the December 9th edition of the Washington Post, and the front cover story is a look back at the riots which took place in Baltimore this past April following the death of Freddie Gray. The Post took the time to interview a few of the residents and get their personal take on how things have been, and has any positive change come to the streets of Baltimore after the riots. And one of the brothers that they interviewed was a young man that was out there on the streets peddling drugs from time to time, and he stated that he ended up finding out shortly after the riots that there were a few storefront apartments that were up for sale and that they were only selling for just $5,000 apiece. He then said that when he ran the idea of getting together and investing in the neighborhood past several brothers that he was out there selling drugs with on the streets, all of them told him no. And see, this goes to what brothers like myself, Sean James, and many others who are right here on YouTube have been telling y'all about this modern Negro. Okay, this Baltimore brother that was interviewed by the Washington Post had a great idea and the right frame of mind to purchase this storefront property while the price is extremely low. But the rest of the Negroes that are around him ended up dragging him into the quagmire of apathy that surrounds the Negro landscape.
She a dude. She get hit you in your face. She a dude. That bitch scared, nigga. Oh, oh. Beat her motherfucking ass. She drug you, motherfucking nigga. Beat her motherfucking ass. She a nigga. Can't nigga hurting herself. You from New State.
Look, the main spot that this brother was looking to purchase had five rooms between both of the upstairs levels, and it just needed a little bit of furnishing. These spots could have easily been rented out to tenants or used as cheap housing by family and friends that could have worked a legitimate business out of that storefront. The Negro just don't get it, because the more legitimate storefronts, strip mall shops, apartments, and tenements you own would lessen the police targeting you, because then you could do what the foreigners and white folks that own these places do, which is hire the police to work security at your properties and places of business. Why do you think they don't go upside the heads of these foreigners? Because they step to the police officers and let them know that they have work for them. These foreigners and white folks that own and run these storefronts hire the cops, and if they don't pay them with cash, they give them free merchandise and meals on the house, so they in turn look out for them. And half these cops do moonlighting security at these places even when they are on duty, because all they got to do most of the time is just drive through with a squad car or do a quick foot patrol right near the business or apartment housing units that are being rented out. This is why they don't give the Chan family or any Chinese youngster any problems when they see them in the hood by their dry cleaners. This is why they don't bother Mr. or Mrs. Akbar or any Arab kids that they see near the gas stations they own. This is why they don't mess with Miss Yee or any of her grandkids that are close to the nail salon she owns. Because they take a small percentage of the proceeds and pad the local policeman's pockets. And see, your typical foolish Negro that would challenge what I just told you will say, well, see, you insinuating that we got to bribe the police for them to stop brutalizing us. But they, like most, don't know anything about capitalism. It is a game of economic musical chairs. I just gave you the analogy when I mentioned all the foreign families that own all the storefronts, strip malls, and rental properties. Who is the only one who is left standing up with no businesses or property to speak of when the music is done playing and the cops roll through the neighborhood? That's us, yapping back and forth when the music stops and they tell our loitering asses to get moving or catch a bruising. That's us, walking around with sagging pants and glow-in-the-dark fluorescent color wigs like this sister that you see right here tossing rocks during the riot last April. Now, she's throwing rocks and expressing her anger and frustration, but she has a fresh weave on top of her head, which helped pay some of the officers that broke Freddie Gray's back. So who is the sellout and coon, black folks? And think about it. If you own some of those storefronts and control the flow of unlaundered, legitimate-made currency that comes through those areas, you can do your illegal dirt all day long without that much harassment from the local authorities. You might draw attention from a few alphabet gang organizations like the DEA, FBI, and others, but the local guys aren't going to pay that much attention because you're helping them pay bills and you're putting food in their stomach. And since I brought up the subject of illegal activity and you pants-sagging clowns love to talk about how gangster you are, why don't you do what some of the Irish, Italian, Jewish, and Polish immigrants your dumbass keeps trying to emulate did by legitimizing some of your hustles and using the same police force that chases you around the neighborhood as a shield. See, most Negroes will try to tell you that we are always at the end of a nightstick, a baton, or getting showered with bullets just because we are black. But ask yourself a question. Why aren't that many Ethiopians and West Africans getting mollywopped and punished to the extent that many so-called African Americans are in the U.S.? Remember, they're just as black and sometimes way darker than us. But why are there fewer cases of them being brutalized and killed by the police like we saw with Amadou Diallo or Abner Louima, both of which took place in New York? Why so few cases compared to us so-called Afro-Americans? It's because they're smart enough to own businesses, restaurants, furniture stores, parking lots, etc., and pay the cops to look the other way so their fellow countrymen aren't harmed in any way. That's the logical thing to do. But you can't tell this Negro from America that, because you're still living off the backwards principle and creed of entitlement, which these liberals drafted up for us long ago. Instead of assessing this situation from a global perspective and seeing that everyone else seems to be purchasing everything around us so they can live comfortable lives and keep us at a position of marginalization as opposed to putting themselves in that boat, the Negro man and woman in the U.S. will counter it by saying, see, I object because my tax dollars pay for the police not to harass me. No, they don't, you imbecile. Especially after Uncle Sam rapes their paycheck just like he rapes everybody else's. Now, your pro-whack movement pseudo-black nationalist leaders will call me a coon for telling you this, but this is something that they know firsthand. They also know that you more than likely won't view this phenomenon from all angles because you're still under the influence of the can't we all just get along flavor Kool-Aid most black folks drank after the post-Civil Rights Movement era, thinking that all the bigotry-enhanced physical assaults and beatdowns we took during chattel slavery and Jim Crow had an exclusive cutoff date to them. Which is why every single year, one of these highly publicized police brutality incidents takes place. There's some dumb Negro that says, I don't believe that in 2087, this is still happening to black people. Yeah, it is. And it's going to keep on happening in 2088 if you don't adopt a different way of thinking, dummy. Your pseudo-black nationalists won't tell you that you are mostly to blame for this continually happening because they want you to keep feeling sorry for yourself and attend more lectures and debates where they argue over whether or not a woman is God or which master teacher's philosophy is better to follow. But I'm here to tell you right now, black folks, that we don't need to attend a gazillion seminars, travel with a million other jugheads to commemorate the anniversary of a march that never led to mass black improvement, or study the teachings of some philosophical doctor with 10 degrees to find a solution to our problem. This brilliant brother from Baltimore that was interviewed in the December 9th edition of the Washington Post, who more than likely didn't even finish high school, just gave us the answer. And if you're wondering why I titled this thing Ballin' on Baltic Avenue, I did so as a way of saluting one of my grandfathers. See, long ago when I was a very little boy, he taught me how to play Monopoly. I was about 7 years old, and I was all geeked up racing around the board to buy Boardwalk and Park Place. And he said, go right on ahead. He let me do it and said, I'll just buy a Baltic, Mediterranean, Oriental, and all these other properties that you aren't even thinking about. So as the game went on, and I only owned Boardwalk, Park Place, and Pacific, I think, he had all the other properties, the railroads, the waterworks, the electric company, and a whole bunch of hotels and houses on all of them while I was looking silly. And I ended up having to sell what I owned and wait for that $200 paycheck once I passed go. Once it finally set in that I lost the game, he chuckled and told me, son, you got to own what's in the ghetto before you walk around the block. And that lesson that my grandfather Dave, rest his soul, taught me still applies to this very day. Ownership is a universal language, no matter what culture or ethnicity you come from, because it regulates the sort of relationship you're going to have with most of the people around you.
What's it like to live where you work? For most of us, that's unthinkable. But imagine living and working at one of the biggest factories in the world. A workplace the size of Monaco. For these 17,000 employees, it's reality. They come from all over China, seeking a brighter future at this factory called Yupa. Workers craft coffee makers, irons, and electric grills in staggering... What's it like to live where you work? For most of us, that's unthinkable. But imagine living and working at one of the biggest factories in the world. A workplace the size of Monaco. For these 17,000 employees, it's reality. They come from all over China, seeking a brighter future at this factory called Yupa. What's it like to live where you work? For most of us, that's unthinkable. But imagine living and working at one of the biggest factories in the world. A workplace the size of Monaco. For these 17,000 employees, it's reality. They come from all over China, seeking a brighter future at this factory called Yupa. Workers craft coffee makers, irons, and electric grills in staggering quantities every single day. What's it like to live where you work? For most of us, that's unthinkable. But imagine living and working at one of the biggest factories in the world. A workplace the size of Monaco. For these 17,000 employees, it's reality. They come from all over China, seeking a brighter future at this factory called Yupa. Workers craft coffee makers, irons, and electric grills in staggering quantities every single day. But Yupa is more than a steady paycheck. It's home. People get married here. They send their kids to school here. But the work never stops. Yupa's managers are on a mission to produce new products for every corner of the globe that could forever change the way we think of made in China. Step behind the closed doors of modern China into a factory the size of a city.
Okay, I had to dial back in. Can you hear me now? Let me see. Hello? Oh, wait a minute. It didn't even, All right, you can hear me now. Okay. All right, let me just make that. I just opened up your mic, but it, hold it. All right, 410, can you hear me? All right. I'm getting your text messages, but... All right, I got your mic open. If you can... let's do it this way. All right, if you can hear me, press 1... And let's see if we can get, press 1. Let's see how that works. Okay, now. All right, you heard that. All right, can you hear me now? You still hear me? I can't hear you, though. is this is a weird sound system today. All right, well, let me try. All right, I'm going to close your mic for a bit. I'm going to play the, all right. I'm going to do two things. I'm going to refresh this page, then call back in. Okay.
What's it like to live where you work? For most of us, that's unthinkable. But imagine living and working at one of the biggest factories in the world.
All right.
A workplace the size of Monaco. For these 17,000 employees, it's reality. They come from all over China, seeking a brighter future at this factory called Yupa. Workers craft coffee makers, irons, and electric grills in staggering quantities every single day. But Yupa is more than a steady paycheck. It's home. People get married here. They send their kids to school here. But the work never stops. Yupa's managers are on a mission.
Okay, I called back. I hung up, then called back in. Okay,
hello?
Now can you hear me? Now I can hear
yes.
you.
Okay. Hey, look, it was my bust. I was on mute.
Okay. No, but on my end, it usually makes a noise when I opens up somebody's mic, and it wasn't doing that. But this last time it did it. Well, I got a question for you. Okay. Are you familiar with this shooting that happened in Akron, Ohio?
Yeah, me and my cousin was talking about it this morning before you came on.
Okay. Well, when I went on my rant, which I don't think you heard, my solution is black men, although I know it's not practical on a mass level, move out to those green areas. Move out to the country. Where there are no police forces. That's one of my. It's not the only strategy, but I think that for many who could do it, I think that it's probably the fastest strategy. Statistically, it's not a guarantee, but statistically, dramatically lower the chances of getting hit like that guy did. That's just my opinion. Anyway.
Are you talking to me?
Yeah, I was talking to you.
Brother L.A., have you ever heard this jingle? You can take the boy out of the country, but you can't take the country out of the boy.
I have heard of it.
L.A., look, me and my cousin was talking about this morning. I wish he was listening to you. It's going to take more than that, L.A. If you don't change the thinking and the mind, regardless of where some of our people are, they're going to be confronted either by the police or us. Because what has happened is, and you know, you're a young man, you're in Pearkey. We baby boomers, we didn't carry on the tradition of letting the neighborhood raise a child. It used to be, when I was growing up, regardless of where I went at in my neighborhood, there was always somebody that would take corrective action on me if I was doing something foolish. Mm-hmm. I was taught before I left the house how to respond to authority, how to respect other people's property, and to carry myself in a respectable manner. That we did not carry on. Us baby boomers didn't carry that on. So when you and Pianki came along, We didn't pass that on to you young guys. And that's what's happening, Brother L.A. Look, and you've heard this, how parents have that talk with the young black men. Hey, look, when you're stopped, you say, yes, sir, no, sir, how can I help you, officer?
Mm-hmm.
You're taught if you walk by a person's house and that dog, you see an angry dog, you don't run, you stop and try and calm that dog down. You don't run. And the other thing is you respect other people's property. You do right when everybody else is doing wrong. If you're hanging with the wrong crowd, you get out of that crowd because you're either doing what they're doing or you want to do what they're doing. And the thing is, we're setting our kids up like sitting ducks. And that's what it's all about, Brother L.A., the rap, the gangster movies, the actions of these television shows and stuff. It teaches us to be respectful, disrespectful to one another and the law and our parents, and to not try and be morally respected. And that's what this whole thing is about. So now, yeah, you can move to the country, but some kind of way you're going to come in contact with authority. And we have not been taught to respect authority, regardless of how bankrupt it is in America. There's a certain way you're supposed to carry yourself to be respected and to respect others. And that's not being done.
Well, what was the backstory, if you know it, on because from what I read, 60 shots, I don't know, 60 bullets hit him, and there were 8 policemen. And that's a whole lot of people for one man.
It is, Brother L.A., but I carry a clip that has 11 round clip and one in the chamber.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm quite sure the police has the other ones that carry 17. Some of them carry 17 in a clip. But Brother L.A., look, number one, he will stop for a traffic. Let's go back. He will stop for a traffic violation.
Okay.
Now, I don't know if it was an equipment equipment failure, or it wasn't right or what. But why would you go on a chase running from the police, and then when you get out, you got a ski mask on? You're asking for it.
True, I agree.
Now, and look, me and my cousin was talking this morning, and look, you can bring your boy in here. I am not going to defend, my grandmama said, and look, I'm putting her on the spot, God rest her soul. She says, I'm not going to defend you in your wrongness. And a whole lot of people used to say that in our neighborhood. Brother L.A., I am not going to defend you when you got a rap sheet. You're always getting in trouble. You're committing a crime. You're selling drugs. You're ripping off old ladies. And you're robbing people. I am not going to march for you. I am not going to defend you if you got dirty hands. Now, I don't know what this young man was up to. Now, they said that he fired a shot in the car, which I don't know whether that's true or not. They found a gun in the car. There was a ring in the car. But we don't know whether that happened or not. Well, if you open the door, a light shines. The police car was behind him when I looked at the video. Now, if he got out and he fired a shot while he was in the car, why come he didn't have the gun in his hand when he was running? If you're going to shoot one time and you have engaged somebody, you just keep shooting. But this guy got out running, and that's when they unloaded on him. But I can't Brother L.A.,
but hold on, you said he had a mask on?
A ski mask, yes.
A ski mask.
If you see the video, he had a ski mask on.
That's very suspect right there.
Something ain't right.
Very unusual.
In Ohio in the summertime with a darn ski mask on.
Right.
Now, Ohio is a little cooler than where we live at. We're down south, but it's still warm. Too warm for a damn summer.
You're right.
Well, it's hot here, but it's hot where you are. But even where you are in the summertime, regardless of where you are, south of Canada, it's very unusual for you to have a damn ski mask on.
I will agree. And July is very unusual. July, June, very unusual.
Yeah. So my thing is this year, Brother Elliot, I can't defend you when you're wrong. I won't defend you when you're wrong. And look, I'm a black man. I'm neither a pseudo-conservative or a pseudo-liberal. I'm a black person. I don't fit in either one of those white-made categories or white-influenced categories that some of our black folk fit in. But the thing is this, Brother L.A., I am not going to defend you when you're a damn troublemaker in my neighborhood. I don't give a damn who you are. And I ain't marching for you, and I feel sorry for his parents. But Brother L.A., he didn't do what was right, and I can't defend him. And it hurts me to say this. And look, even if he is a criminal, he didn't deserve that, but I can't defend his actions. Now, I don't know about you. Well, I know you don't march, but the thing is, I'm just saying that, hey.
I don't know the backstory. In other words, now, I didn't know about the ski mask, because you're right, that's highly suspicious. Unless you're somewhere like in Nome, Alaska, this time of year, you know, where, you know, that's an extreme place. But that, in Ohio, and I've been in Ohio this time of year.
I have too.
And the ski mask, particularly if you know the police is there. And like you said, it's like I said, you just don't run past a dog and trying to get away. The dog's gonna do this, you know, it seemed like he wasn't thinking. At the very least, he was not thinking.
Brother L.A., look. These rappers come up there with the hood on. Don't get me wrong. You can wear a hood, a hoodie. There's nothing wrong with wearing
hoodies all the time. Yeah.
Yeah, me too. But the thing is what white media has done and white entertainment has done is portray young black guys as hoodlums with a hood on.
Right.
So automatically you're painted as a damn criminal by them. Mm-hmm. So with that being the case, even so, I don't give a damn. I don't care if you're mentally retarded. Wearing a ski mask in the summertime tells me your bread ain't done. You're half-baked. And even if you are half-baked,
you're right.
The mentally retarded people don't walk around with a darn ski mask on in the summertime, you know. But,
right.
You know, L.A.,
he was asking
just dropped the ball.
No, well, when ski mask, you're asking for trouble. If you're running from the police, you're asking for trouble.
Brother L.A.,
I don't know what he was doing.
If you're a black man confronted by police, your chances are very, very slim. You got to be mighty, mighty careful. Mighty, mighty careful. When I drive, I put my wallet in the left corner on the driver's side of my windshield. That way you can always see my hand. My registration card is in the sun visor where you can see my
hand. Makes sense. Makes sense.
But even so, L.A., on your best day as a black person, and I hate to say this, and I know you got some naysayers out there, as a black person, even on your best behavior, you have got to be careful when you're confronted by law enforcement in this country or any country. And the thing is, we just have not done a good enough job on training our children. I'm going to be honest with you, and I hate to say this, but the good guys always lose because of these damn knuckleheads out here that ain't raised right. Like Philando
Castile. You get a point. I know my mother gave me a piece of advice. This before I even got my driver's license. She said, don't get in the car with a bunch of boys. So with some years later, I was in high school. We had played another high school in basketball, and the schools were like maybe 5 miles apart, if that. And so we were driving back from the other school where we just finished the game back to our school. Luckily, we were, because it was a parochial school, so we had a uniform of, blazer, dress shirt, tie, and all that. So I was pulled over in Prince George's County, Maryland, with a bunch of boys, and I'm just looking at it. I had forgot about my own. I'm looking at it. I'm in the car with my teammates. Okay, but we happen to be all black. We have white players, but they weren't in my car that day. So we just said that the police pulled me over and didn't give a ticket, warning, or nothing, and just said, where are you going? And I said, well, we just finished the game at, it was Bladensburg High School, and we're going back to, DeMatha, which was a parochial school. And he let us go with no problem. And then shortly after that, I thought about what my mother said. Don't get in the car with. But due to the fact that he knew our school and we had on, those blazers and the ties and all that, he didn't write up a ticket or nothing like that. But now my interaction with the police thus far, I haven't had any problems. Simply because by the time they come up to my window, if I'm driving, I have the license, registration, proof of insurance, and driver's license. That hand is out of the windows, all the way rolled down. So by the time they walk to the car, it's there.
My hand
good
is
evening,
on the
good
window.
Good afternoon, good morning, officer. And I haven't had no problem because I'm looking at, they want to get home probably more so than I want to get home. I don't have to pull over cars where I don't know what's going to jump. Because I imagine some of these guys, when they go to work, they're jacked up going to work because they don't want to go to work, but they got to go to work because they got families. And they deal with all kind of people throughout the day. So I'm looking at, the nicer I can be to him, the quicker he can go about his business and the quicker I can go about my business. So far that strategy has worked for me.
Well, Brother L.A., is the luck of the draw. This society has always painted us in a very negative light. They've always trained them to you don't respect the rights of a colored fellow. And the least little bit you give them is a license for them to come down on you with all 4 feet. So now, yeah, you were dressed with a tie, but that don't mean nothing. I was in Baltimore. A preacher, his wife, and his children was going to church where he preached. They made them get out of the damn car, get down on the sidewalk while they were going through their car. Now, this guy was an upstanding citizen. So it doesn't matter how good you dress. It doesn't matter your degrees as far as your education. It doesn't matter how much money you got. Like you said before, it all depends on what kind of day that guy has. If he's had an argument with his old lady, and they already look at you as less than anyway, he might just give you a bunch of shit. And you better not, as my old folks used to say, you better not rail back at him. that's just the way it is. A lot of people say, well, you know, I did everything right. I got a PhD. I got a good job. I come from a good family. I live in a good neighborhood. That don't mean shit when you're black in this country. And I know your boy talks this stuff about, yeah, you know, I'm successful and all of this shit. It don't mean nothing. Those football players in Pittsburgh was complaining about they were driving those nice cars and everything, had just come from football practice, and they used to get stopped on a regular basis. Mm-hmm. They had to bring Al Sharpton in there to plead their case. So, yeah, you had your town, you had your – and look, what about those girls that got stopped down there?
So far, I've been very, very fortunate. I'll put it that way.
You have.
Because you're right. Anything can go left, and you can't even anticipate it.
That's right.
Things do go left.
Yeah. Well, Brother Elliott, what about that busload of girls from Delaware State that was coming back from a volleyball team or something, and the highway patrolman stopped them for no reason at all? Now, these are girls, black girls. And a during tour bus, stopped the tour bus, they looked like they were suspicious. They might have had marijuana on the bus and stuff, that kind of stuff. Yeah, I mean, and look, it's a good thing one of them didn't rile up and talk back to them. But that happened.
I've been stopped at least 3 times by either state troopers on the highway or county police, and they didn't issue a ticket or whatever. I forget. It was, but 3 times I can remember, and they just let me go, no ticket or nothing like that. But I'm going to say this. I didn't question them. I did not, you know, other than, you know, may I help you, officer, and that was about it. But
that's all I did.
Right, because essentially, if you go into your Perry Mason and I know my rights there, you're asking for trouble. So, but I will say that I have been very, very fortunate thus far. Because bizarre, like that guy that was in Dallas, Texas, I mean, you can't get no bizarre than that. You're sitting at home. In the privacy of your own home, in your underwear, with a bowl of ice cream, watching the ball game, and then somebody comes to your door and shoots you. That's really bizarre. That's probably the most bizarre case I've ever heard of.
Well, there are other cases too, Brother L.A. I looked at this case in Oklahoma. A guy was an honorary cop.
Mm-hmm.
They had the brother on the ground. They were handcuffing him. And he thought, in his words, that he was pulling out a taser. And for what? The man wasn't struggling. He pulled out a revolver and shot the guy. Laying on the ground. You know what I mean? There's all kinds
of... That's happened twice in the last 7 or 8 years that's happened twice that I know about.
Yeah, I mean, this guy was on the ground, wasn't resisting. What the hell was he going to pull out a damn taser for? They were handcuffing the guy. The guy wasn't resisting. And he pulls out what he thought was a taser and killed the guy. He was in Oklahoma, where you sometimes reside at.
Mm-hmm.
He was an honorary policeman. He was an insurance guy, and every weekend they let him ride. And
well, there's another case
car.
Out in Ohio, not Ohio, or Oklahoma, where there was a bunch of police, and the female cop shot the dude dead. And it's on video on YouTube somewhere, and the jury let her walk. I thought that was a very bizarre case.
I saw that, but look, Brother L.L., go back to where I started at in this conversation. She told him to stop. He kept walking.
Yeah,
The thing is, no, she probably didn't have to shoot him, but all I'm saying is you're supposed to adhere to commands. He kept walking
right
back to his doing what he was doing, which I go back to what I was saying. Look, you've got to go ahead on. I can defend you when you're right, but I can't defend you when you do something stupid or you're wrong. Now, he
I
was
know,
my
the closest, yeah, as close as I come, I was getting on a Greyhound bus once. And all of a sudden, I heard somebody say, freeze, don't move. And I was just about on the bus. Okay. Nobody was behind me. Nobody was in front. And I just froze. And then off the periphery of my eye, I saw this cop. And what was crazy, I just saw him a few minutes inside the station, the bus station. He was in his, what, three-point stance or whatever, with that gun pointed straight at me. So he lowered his gun. He said, all right, you can get it on the bus. Then he came on the bus, and the person that he was after was in front of me, but they were already on the bus. But I'm so glad that that day, all I did, when he said free, that's exactly what I did. Free. Because had I ran or whatever, I might not be on this conversation right now. Hold on, Beasley. 864, your mic is off.
Hey, what's going on? What's going on? How's everybody doing?
How's it
going?
Good
morning. Good. All right. I guess I'm supposed to be live.
Yeah, we're live.
Yeah, man. As the conversation relates, freedom here in America being relative to black folks, I think we've had this conversation for quite some time. And we've had several groups, foreign groups, that maybe not even had anything to do with building the very infrastructure in which we engage in right now in America. But they are also privy to more rights. And what we're seeing is that these police are killing typically black folks all the time. What we see also in some of the most inhumane crimes that are performed a lot of times are white folks. But they are the one that, in the face of law enforcement, regardless of how inhumane they have just been engaging, how many people they kill, dealing rules, they still will find themselves comfortably taken care of in a police or even maybe getting taken to Burger King on your way from just killing, you know, a church full of people. You understand? And this is a reality, like, of why these people, good old boy systems, the good old boys that are participating in the system, still engaged. I think even when we have the conversation, you guys are very right. And being mindful at their commands and whatnot that are coming, but everybody may not understand commands the same way. And these guys, as these should be trained professionals, to protect and serve, not to seek and destroy. You understand? That's what's happening. And what we don't find is after all of these inhumane killings, I don't know there being some type of police bill or some type of police treatment or the form, you understand, to not coerce. Tell these cops if they kill someone inhumanely, they could be on death penalty. They could get the death penalty or, you know, they could get the harsh. You understand? Because it's happening all too much now. It's been happening since before my time, since, you know, when my mother and father were children, back in the 50s and the 60s. We are Marvin Gaye. He sings about similar songs that we sing about today. It's senseless that we are actually, and then we have a lot of money to do a lot of things, but us as a people, the black people in which the police are killing in whatever fashion, we are the ones that have to come together in order to now form and stand behind policies. Nobody's going to do it for you, nor should they. You understand? This America has been very brute and very intentional in its treatment to black folk in particular, even since slavery. You understand? So what we are seeing now is the residual effects of what happens when we never have changed that dynamic. You understand? We're basically still being treated like slaves. Like our lives don't matter.
Well, that's what I'm saying. What can you do without legislation, the law, and all that is watch your tone when you get stopped, because eventually we all get stopped. And then statistically, it's no guarantee. Statistically, you know, live and do business in areas where, you know, you don't have that interest. But, you know, I've noticed policemen in small towns, at least the ones I've run into, basically have a whole different demeanor than, you know, the beat cop that you might find in a New York City or Baltimore. Because they got
the bigger
the city, the
like,
more toxicity.
Okay.
That's my take on it.
Brother L.A., I hate to break in, sir, but look, Brother L.A., a snake is a snake, okay? A snake will bite you, you don't know when or where. But a white guy is a white guy, whether he's in a rural area or not. It all depends on the circumstances. You got some cops in a rural area that's just as nasty as people are in the heavily populated urban areas. All you got to do is look at Sandra Bland. Sandra Bland wasn't in a urban setting. Yeah, she was in a college town, but that happened in a rural area. Those
people
a lot
of college
had
towns
been
in rural areas.
Yeah, so I mean,
here's my take on Sandra Bland. Now, you're right. The cop and that situation, he was out of line. Nobody doubt it. You're right. But now, my take on Sandra Bland is, and I'm not getting into what happened or what didn't happen when she was locked up that weekend. I'm looking at, all right, the cop asked her to put out the cigarette. I would have put out the cigarette.
Of course. Of course.
And I'm not talking back to him. I'm not questioning him. I'm not getting it. That's just me, though.
You're right. But you know what? I've seen white girls in similar situations. The man give them a ticket and going on about his business. But I go back.
I've seen black girls. I was in the car with a friend of mine, black woman. We were coming out of Annapolis or someplace like that, Maryland, Annapolis, Maryland. She was talking shit to the cop, and believe it or not, his pad was out of tickets or whatever, and I was shocked. I didn't say a damn thing. I was shocked that he let us go.
She was lucky,
but real lucky. Yeah, she was talking shit to him. And I didn't say a damn thing. I was silent. Another time, a friend of mine, we were down by not too far from the White House, somewhere on one part of Pennsylvania Avenue, coming out of a hot plant in Hollywood. We were in the car. It was four of us. You know, the women were in the back, and me and my friend, his girlfriend was back, and then her friend was in the back, and I was in the front passenger seat. So there was no traffic moving. Typically, if you've been in D.C. long enough, you can sense where, okay, wait a minute, there's some kind of dignitary coming through. And in this case, it was Clinton or Bush, one of those presidents. So before on that path, you know, the police stops all traffic, police and Secret Service. So the cop came over and then asked the dude, the friend of mine that was driving, well, he asked him to do something simple. And then he went into his, I know my rights, and then, The cop asked him, he was nice and professional. He said, sir, would you please put your hands on the dashboard? He didn't have to ask my ass. I had it there, and I didn't say a word. And then this dude's girlfriend talked some sense into him. But, I mean, a lot of times we get caught up over nonsense. Now, that's not the case in all cases, but like I said, but here's how I look at the Sandra Bland case. I don't want to give the police any more power than necessary. All right? As an example, using the Sandra Bland case, the cop asked her to put out the cigarette. All right? When he gives her the command or the request to put out the cigarette, now the ball is in or was in Sandra's court, and now she has the power. Now, the way I would have played it, okay, Monday morning quarterback and 3 or 4 years later, the way I would have played it is, okay, he's giving me the power for me to stay in control and not go to jail is follow the command. If the next command was get out of the car, I'm getting out of the car. That's how I look at giving them as least as much power as possible. But the more I argue, try to hold court on the street, I'm giving them more power, and the more power they have, at least my power goes away. And if you play it too hard, you don't have no more power, particularly if they pull out a weapon. But like I said, so far, those strategies have worked for me. So far, I do realize, I'm not foolish, that some people have done everything I just said and more. Still went left. That element does exist. I realize that.
Right, yeah. That's true. I wanted to say that while I agree, you know, basically with what you're saying, and my grandmother used to tell me this, if I don't whoop your butt, the police will whoop your butt. You know, mainly in encouraging discipline before you leave the house. But at the same time, I think, you know, the probe that is to be set on this organization and its relationship to black folk is something that is a lot of times missed with our involvement, high participation and involvement as black African folk that are, you know, and I'm going to say men and women that are participating and engaging in police forces now, more so now than ever. But it still seems like that we as black folk don't have a voice. You understand, this good old boy system somehow still is able to be a game to us. You understand, even when we're talking about certain protocols that are in place, whether it be dash cam, whether it be the body cam, all of these things can be turned off and they can be thrown out in court in the favor of the cop. You know, and when we look at the system, it's a bigger system that we as adult, conscious black folk, men and women, are observing and assessing. We should be able to do that consciously and say, well, hey, with our tax dollars going here, should our children, regardless of what they're doing, unless they have a gun pointed at the cops, should they be dying? Because there are those children that are drunk. Those children have been, like I said, been drinking. They may be on drugs, but they don't deserve to die just because they took the wrong medication and may be acting kind of weird. That's what I see. These police, as they should be professionals at dealing with, you know, the public. But a lot of times they are just good old boys with badges that are a lot of times associated with white supremacist groups. And that kind of goes even out there in L.A. They were talking about how they found out that there was a whole, the LAPD, I think, had a gang or something in it. You know, where is the RICO charges that have been put there? The RICO charges can be implemented to the black folk. But you know who the biggest gang is in America? It's the Aryan Nation. But a lot of times their involvement with the police force, it goes under the radar. You understand? And this is how it mm-hmm. plays out. You know, and I think this is an honest conversation that we should be able to have. And like you say, even if you were doing all of the right things and don't have a gun, you're only reading a book, that a lot of times where we are still going to die. And what we see is, like the brother said, like I went to a store last night, and you can't just sit around in my state, in my city, and just drink, you know, open container out in front of a store. But there was some, you know, lighter skin, you know, some Caucasian and I think maybe some Spanish folk out in front of the store just drinking casually. And I know if that had been me and the brothers, somebody would have definitely called in, hey, they aren't supposed to be drinking. But a lot of times the law, it doesn't see their own children. It doesn't see, you know, and this is, you know, it's been happening for a while. And they wrong our children even if they're playing with a toy gun.
Yeah, that's happened too. Well, I think Claude Anderson rings up, he has a strategy in his 5-4 thing, is we need to start bankrolling the system. Matter of fact, I think an unutilized political weapon that we have, a political economic weapon that we have, the Neighborhood Civic Association. Now, you got a bunch of those across the country. And I think if we can start using those to be a de facto political, local political action committee where neighbors pay into a membership fund or dues or whatever they want to call it, and they start bankrolling pension funds of the police, who's going to be the police chief, what kind of legislation, and right now they're not using it. That's got to be one of the most unutilized institutions in the country. I think we need to use them that way and do some things politically, as Claude Anderson would say, economically too. And then on an entrepreneurial level, if I was an auto customizer, I think this would be a good time I would be going to black churches, black neighborhoods, black subdivisions, anything black, and I would offer, look, get your car outfitted or customized with just like the police, they have cameras now. I think, matter of fact, if I was in Detroit, that's what I would do. But on an entrepreneurial level, I think that market's wide open.
So, you know what?
That's just a
excuse
story.
Me, brother. My mm-hmm. cousin's ex-wife got all of her sons that camera that you put on the mirror,
okay.
like you're talking about. But look. Mm-hmm. Brother L.A., you see what happens with body cams. Everybody say, look, if the police are outfitted with body cams, some of this will stop. Then they came up and said, well, police needs more training on how to engage. Mm. All of that's good. But you see, it ain't working. It ain't working, Brother L.A. And I go back to where we just middle way the conversation. We black men have got to get off of our behinds, and we need to work with these young guys. And look, I talk to them all the time. We need to work with these guys because they're getting too much negative influence out here. And we need to stress to them, now, look, you can get out here and get hot-headed, and we need to talk to these guys' parents. Look, if you know your son's out there doing in and everything, you need to talk to them. And then most of them can't talk to them anyway, but the thing is we need to get on a mass massive educational strategy. Put out a mass educational strategy and say, look, yeah, I know it's going to make you mad. I know they're going to talk to you like you shit. But the thing is, you can't plead your case out there in the street, a la Sandra Bland. You take that ticket, and when you get to where you need to get at and you challenge that ticket, you go in and you make sure that you bring that up. Go to court with it. Now, the other thing, Brother L.A., and you and I have had this conversation before, you and Claude Anderson are very naive. And I'm not saying that in a bad way, but you can contribute all you want to these local officials out here, especially in the rural areas.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the national, you see how these politicians are doing, even the black politicians. A white guy is not going to go back to his neighborhood as a politician, and I'm going to use a negative term here, which it ain't negative, but I got to use this shit to get my point across, and belabor a nigger lover. When you hear him say he's weak on law enforcement, then he's weak on crime. They have already
They don't like that.
No, they see a young black guy being arrested in chains going to jail for a crime. And the thing is, he can't go back. That he or she, which is a white politician, all the way up to president, can't go back and face his race when he's doing policies that might benefit us or act like he's acting in our stead. It just ain't going to happen. Because this society has put up that line that says, look, you can't respect them. They don't have morals. And the thing is, they're a bunch of criminals, dope addicts, and they're having children out of wedlock and all of this stuff. He can't go back. I don't give a damn how much money
you
give.
You know who that happened to? After the O.J. Simpson, the murder trial, after he was acquitted, that's how they came down on Kardashian.
Now, look, go back further
and
than
L.A. He had to backpedal.
Yeah, but go back further than that. Do you remember the caucus when they had that Willie Horton ad?
Oh, yeah, I remember that. I remember that.
The caucus was in the lead until they brought that out.
When they ran that commercial, that was his end.
That was his end.
And that, so and now, you know what? That commercial's got to be on YouTube somewhere. I remember that commercial clearly. He lost just on that.
Yeah. So now you can put all the money out there you want to, but he's got to go back to, he or she has to go back to their neighborhood. And they cannot, look, that thing about being a nigger lover, that's why in the Democratic Party, they get our votes, but they don't pursue our policies the way they should, because Nancy Pelosi and all of them will tell you, we're trying to get that white suburban vote. We're trying to get that white male vote out there. That's a saying. All you got to do, that's a coded message to say, hey, we're only going to go so far with you black folks, even though we're getting your vote. See, we need to get their vote out there. And they know they can win with a block of black votes, but, hey, they're steady pursuing that soccer mom, that middle-class white vote out there.
Yeah, that soccer mom holds a lot of power.
Well, what I'm telling you is that they're telling you, hey, look, we're only going to go so far with you. Hey, look, we're white. We got to go back to those people. They know they ain't going to get that vote. But what they're telling white folks is, and we should be able to understand this, that they're saying, hey, look, your vote don't matter to us, even though we're getting it. We're winning with it. But you can't expect us to go against our people. That's what they're telling us in a coded message. But we ain't getting it.
Yeah. You're right. Willie Horton.
Yeah.
And you know how many politicians took that same thing, you know, we're tough on crime?
Yeah.
Other politicians
but that's a code,
right behind that.
Yeah, but that's a coded message. What about the Broken Windows campaign? That's a coded message to say, look, we're going to keep them niggas in their place. That's what it's saying. We're going to come down hard on them. And look, most of the white folks ain't even bothered by our crime. It's blacks committing crimes against black.
Right.
See, we ain't getting the message. So now when you and Claude Anderson say you got to contribute to his campaign, no, hell no. It ain't. It's a dull knife. It just ain't cutting. What you can do, though, and this is going to shake up you and the brother out there on the other line, is you're going to have to let them know on a person-to-person basis, hey, look, when you come in our neighborhoods, you better be right. Because if you ain't right, sometimes we might have to take matters into our own hands. And you ain't got to tell them that. Mm-hmm. But when somebody does something like that, you find their favorite water hole and you beat the shit out of them off duty, they'll get the message. And I know that's extreme, mm-hmm. but see, the only thing some people understand is when you push back on their ass hard.
Well, you're right. Well, Beasley, we're going to end it on there today, and you have a safe rest of the holiday. I guess people will be back to normal. I guess, what's the day? They travel today or tomorrow?
No, today is a holiday. This is the 4th.
Yeah, I know it's a holiday today, but they got to be at work to what, tomorrow, don't they?
Yeah, and I wanted to start off with this, Brother L.A. I hope you're proud to be in America today and look at the beautiful things that we have created to make this country a success, how we built this marvelous, powerfully economic country.
I like this holiday because, 7 years ago, on July 3rd, that's when I bought my first 4 acres, the day before the 4th of July. So that's why I like this holiday.
Well, I like it because, hey, look, we created this. How did those preachers say it? I forgot. Hey, this is a marvelous day and be glad in it for the wonderful world that we have made for white folks. Now it's time for us to make it for ourselves. Because you know we built this now. You take that to your boy Pianki because he doesn't believe it.
He's a builder himself.
No, it's not. According to him, he ain't built shit. Because if we didn't build this, he didn't build nothing. And I told him that. But the thing is, I give him credit, but the thing is, he better give us credit too. And I bust him in his butt every time he says that. But anyway. I'll let you go, Brother L.A., and put the grill on, and I'll be
Have a good day. Have a safe one. All right.